Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
And it is the 2nd of August. It's Saturday night. This is the State Sovereignty Show presented by Missouri Grassroots Radio, hosted by Dave of Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Mike Slack, our co-host, will be along in a moment. He's stuck in traffic. And we expect him to pop in here any second. Tonight we're going to give you a last chance at 347-677-1835 to call in and get a push in for your favorite legislator or to make your case for or against any of the five statewide ballot questions. I want to tell you something that you've heard and heard and heard over and over again, and that is it's important to vote. This audience is more educated than most, and it's very important for you to vote. It's important to vote educated. They're estimating that about 25% of the registered voters will go out and vote on Tuesday. I don't know if it has struck you yet or not, but that means that things like the right to farm and the 3/4 cent property, sales tax, are going to be decided, if it's a close vote, by 13.5% of the registered voters. I find that atrocious. I find that sad and probably a symptom of a decaying republic. I'm not sure to this day that there's any hope we'll ever recover this thing. But if we are going to, we're going to do it only one way, and that is for states to stand up to the federal government and say, we are the sovereign state of Missouri. You have a place, and we're putting you back in it. I think that's the only hope. We're going to come back after the election. We're going to start talking about things that have to do with state sovereignty. We're going to start talking about the Convention of the States. We're going to start talking about what we need to do to the Constitution of the United States of America to make that happen. I see Mike coming in now and get stuck in traffic there, huh, Mike?
Well, I had a friend come by to visit for a little while. And actually, he raised the question of the statement you last made. He asked me what percentage of the population it took to actually change the Constitution. And when I told him that with an election like this, 25 to 30% or even less could do it, he was appalled.
Exactly.
And his big question was, why were these ballots put on the primary when they have traditionally low voter turnout? I couldn't answer other than just, you know.
Well, it's politics. It's politics. The governor decides which particular election anything like this is going to go on. I'm convinced that that the governor chose these particular ones, you know, and there are questions still pending which he he had a bunch of questions sitting on his desk. Some of them he decided to put on the November ballot. There are proposed constitutional amendments that came out of this very session of legislature that hit his desk at the same time that these five did, and three of those went to the November election, and five of them went to this election. It's all about calculating the voter turnout. It's all about manipulating his own grassroots to get them out for an election. He wants Democrats, activist Democrats, out for this election. He knows that statewide there are very few hotly contested Democratic primaries, if any. And so the hot button questions have to go on this ballot to get the activist Democrats out so that they can do things like they're plotting down in Lawrence County, where they intend to unseat Mike Moon. I was out today stumping for Mike, and I'll tell you what, I came away from that thing a little bit more optimistic that's quite a winnable race.
Good.
The people who were in favor of Mike, who would vote for Mike, they are definite voters. The people who were opposed to Mike were clearly a little bit more apathetic about even getting out on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
What we need
good.
Is a good rainy Tuesday now.
Mm-hmm.
So
we do.
What else is new down Thayer way, Mike?
Well, we have two of the Republican Committee townships. They're both a male and female representative from each township across
right.
the state. Two of those races are contested for the very first time in our county. My friend who stopped by a while ago has been on the committee for quite a while with his wife, and his position is one of the contested ones. So he is actually campaigning right now with his neighbors.
Good. Yeah.
And I know the other one is also has some campaigning going on. The interesting thing there is he is a very liberty-minded person who supported Ron Paul. He and I were kind of talking about the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party, and he and I agree we have elements of each party that we really like a lot. We're not 100% either. According to discussions we've had, I'm more of a hawk than the Libertarians. I believe the borders should be controlled, and the Libertarian Party doesn't. I tend to be a little less theological than some of my Constitution Party friends. I find a lot of things I like about both and support both those parties. He's the same way. And we suspect the person running against him is more of a traditional Mitt Romney-type Republican.
Ah, yes.
And we suspect that person might have been it might have been suggested that he run by someone in the party hierarchy who wants someone that might be a little more controllable.
For the listeners who don't know, what is the role of a Republican Central Committee? How does all that work? I mean,
they are again at the local level, the party representatives, and counties are divided up into townships, and there will be a male and a female in each township. I think we have a total of 20 or 22 representatives, 10 or 11 townships in my county. They get together on a regular basis. Now, by law, they are only, or by state party rule, actually, it's probably state party rule, they're only required to get together and meet once to be sworn in every 2 years right after the congressional election. But traditionally, in healthy counties, they meet monthly or almost monthly. And their primary function is to find and recruit good candidates for the party. But as an example of kind of some of the sideline things they do, Senator Mike Cunningham, who was on with us last night, is reopening an office in West Plains. He has a huge district, and he lives near Rogersville. So he'll have an office open 2 days a week in West Plains, grand opening Monday. And then he's coming down to Thayer, to the senior center, for a reception with the folks here. And then our county seat, the small town of Alton, he'll do the same thing again in a couple of weeks. So the committee was asked to assist, to kind of be staff for that event and, you know, provide snacks and drinks, things like that. I had suggested during the last major election that our committee sponsor town hall meetings and said, you know, we could even get together with the Democratic committee and see if they wanted to co-sponsor town hall meetings and let all of the candidates speak and take questions from the voters. And there had apparently never been a town hall meeting like that in this county before. Now, oddly enough, and I believe that my committee is really run by folks who would be more the Mitt Romney traditionalist type, who might be more susceptible to suggestions, we'll say, from the party machine in Jeff City. And they did not want to do that. So a small group of us actually got together as individuals and organized two town hall meetings last time. So we had individuals to meet doing what the party committee should have been doing. And the Missouri Precinct Project, you know, to me, they are doing some of the things that a committee should be doing in recruiting people that they think would be good committee members. And I know you're familiar with them. I spoke with Judy Sofka with that group today.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
They will be represented at the Preppers and Patriots Expo.
Right.
As will
the Constitution Party and Libertarian Party, am I mistaken?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, the Constitution Party was the very first organization to sign up.
Good.
And they were quick.
So we'll be spending some time here later, folks. So stay tuned. Talking more specifically about Mike's upcoming expo in Springfield, Missouri, Preppers and Patriots, and if you're interested, listen up for that information, and you can come along and find out a little bit more about the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party. Mike and I are pretty much on the same page. I very much favored Cynthia Davis in her last run. I very much favored Doug Inyart in his last run, both Constitution Party candidates. I'm not nuts about the Constitution Party as a whole. Their platform's a little bit shaky, but there are good people in the Constitution Party. There are good people, and this is the beauty of sitting where I sit. You know, if you're Donna Ivanovich, some leader in the Constitution Party, you don't get to believe there are good people in any other party. But sitting here outside of the party structure, not claiming loyalty to any party and not caring to be on a committee for any particular party, I get to say there are good people in the Constitution Party. There are good people in the Libertarian Party. There are good people in the Republican Party. And we'll be talking with and about some of those in upcoming shows. I see the Constitution Party, election after election after election, making some headway. I don't see that out of the Libertarian Party, though, Mike.
Well, not as much, though in Springfield, Missouri, you do have a city councilman, Doug Burleson, who ran for Congress as a Libertarian one time.
He did, and he espouses Libertarianism, but you'd ought to see him on the city council. He's anything but a Libertarian.
Okay. So I'm not living there anymore, so I don't witness
yeah.
it every day.
Oh, heavens no. Yeah.
And I also did support Doug Inyart previously.
Yeah.
And have a 4x8-foot Doug Inyart for Congress sign up at my gate right on the highway right now, which might irritate some other Republicans who know me. But I believe that true party loyalty under, you know, every condition, but, you know, basically only Republicans or only Democrats, I think that's a mental illness. I know folks who vote for one of the major parties because their family has always been Republican or Democrat. And I just think that's the dumbest reason I've ever heard to vote for somebody. You know, you look at the party platforms and see if you're comfortable with any of them, but you still have to look at the candidates.
Yeah.
And when I moved down here and I kind of saw that Joanne Emerson, the longtime Republican incumbent, was a rhino, and she, by the way, resigned, you know, to become queen of all the lobbyists.
Yes.
I voted for the Libertarian candidate. Actually, I supported Bob Parker in the primary. Bob didn't make it. And then in the general election, I voted for the Libertarian candidate. I met him about a year later. I knew his name sounded familiar, and it suddenly hit me. And I said, hey, I voted for you. You know, then, of course, Joanne resigned to become a lobbyist, and I really did not care for the process of choosing a candidate to run on the Republican ticket. Bob Parker again tried for that. He was my first choice. Peter Kinder was interested in it. I was very interested in him. Jason Smith wound up being chosen. And that particular time, because I had differences of opinion with Jason on some things he'd done in the legislature, I supported Doug Inyart. So I really have yet in a general election to vote for Republican since moving this way. And by the way, you asked about the committee. When they were choosing a person to run in the special election, wound up being Jason Smith, the chair and co-chair of the committees in each county within the 8th Congressional District met. And they each cast a vote for the person they wanted to run.
Right.
There was no primary process. The people did not choose the candidate.
Right.
And the committees themselves actually did not choose the candidate because a straw poll among our committee said most people supported Bob Parker.
Right. And you're going to
never... But our chair and
never,
vice chair supported Jason.
I forecasted Jason. You're never going to convince me, not till the day I die, that his selection was not a foregone conclusion from well before the even primary election where Emerson ran against Parker, knowing already she was going to resign as soon as she was elected, but just to keep Parker out, and I believe that whole scenario that played out was pretty much scripted well before the primary even.
And to me, Bob Parker was a fellow with a lot of integrity who did not want to live in Washington, D.C.
Right.
You know, Bob's actually on vacation right now hunting. And, you know, he's an outdoors kind of guy. I think he's one of those few people who would go to Washington and not be changed by it, but would probably change Washington itself. And I think Doug Inyart is of the same stuff, so that's why I'm supporting Doug. And,
now, tell me, because I've had this discussion with Donna, and I believe that in the Constitution Party, that before you can run as a member of the Constitution Party, you have to pass some kind of vetting by the party committee.
That's true.
Now,
yeah.
That must just be a party rule, because I know that I could walk down to the Greene County Courthouse and file to run as a Republican, and my name would appear on the ballot. I don't have to get permission from anyone.
No, the Constitution Party is the only party that does have that vetting process and vetting rule. And I suppose that a person could simply walk down and sign up to run as a Constitution Party candidate, but if you did not go through the vetting process, the party itself probably would not support you. And, you know, I remember another fellow I knew ran for Congress in the 8th District several years ago as a Democrat. I know he was going up against Roy Blunt on the other side. And he was a bit of an eccentric person and not your traditional Democrat. And the party itself did not support him, and they, in fact, either told people to just sit that one out or vote for the Republican. You know, I could see the same thing happening if a, quote, unapproved candidate tried to run. Libertarian Party, though, just sign up and run.
Yeah,
but they generally will get together and decide who they all want to support, informally at least, I think. And,
okay, so it seems to me that within the Republican structure, if I understand it correctly, and I'm sure that the Democratic committees are exactly the same way. That,
as far as I know, they are. Yeah.
That it has followed the federal model and become totally topsy turvy. It seems to me like the party should pretty much be run from the local level, and I'm supposing that when you get to like the National Republican Committee, that these people are formed by a representative from your central committee, being a member of the state committee, who elects
as I understand, a member
of the national committee.
Well, no, as I understand it, the state committee itself is totally separate in that you vote for a state committee member covering your district,
but they
are not necessarily members of your county committee.
I see.
And I think that's kind of odd myself, and don't really like that. Now, we also have legislative committees on the county level. And, for instance, when there's a vacancy for a congressman, then the committee itself sends their chair and vice chair in the entire district to vote, as with Jason.
Right.
With a legislative committee, if, for instance, in Mike Moon's area, if Mike could not run, or if he were hit by a bus, God forbid, and he were elected and they needed to choose someone else for a special election, the legislative committee members would have a meeting and choose the person to run.
I see.
And then there's a senatorial committee, and if, say, Mike Cunningham had to resign for some reason, then the senatorial committee would meet and do the same thing. Many times, the members of the county committee are also members of the senatorial and legislative committees, but not always.
Okay.
And
are those committees also elected positions, or are they appointed by the central committee?
You know, I believe they are appointed. I'm not certain, though, but I think they're appointed. I don't know for sure because my county does not have a legislative committee, and neither do several other counties in, say, Carter County, Shannon County. I think it's Oregon, Ripley, Shannon, and Carter counties that don't have legislative committees. And I wondered why there was a controversy over the law that states when they have to get together and have their every 2 year meeting. And apparently the chair people of the committees, the regular committees, were supposed to meet to form legislative committees within a certain number of days after the last congressional election and did not do so because they did not know. Apparently no one at the state level bothered to tell them. We were redistricted in this area last time. We have a totally different state rep now than we had previously, and it's a totally new district. And, you know, in my opinion, the party, the committee chairs, dropped the ball. You know, they should have been aware of that. And one of the committee chairs, a really good guy, Jerry in Shannon County, very smart fellow, but he pretty much admit that. He said all the chairman made a bit of a mistake, dropped the ball, they should have been more aware of the rules. But on the other hand, the Republican State Committee at the state level also should have let them know. And our own rep, well, he's got staff that have been around the block a few times, they should have let him know. So, you know, I wondered what in the world happened, and it made me wonder if somebody... Here goes my conspiracy theory mind again, but did somebody at the state level not want us to have a legislative committee?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think we're going to make sure that we do actually get one formed according to the rules next time in each of our counties in case it's needed. And I can let you know when we go through that process exactly how it works.
A funny story about this these committees, and I'll be the first to let you know that as someone who's not interested in party politics, I have no clue how they work. But as you know, down in Lawrence County, Mike Moon is being challenged in a primary by the party favorite Julie Ruzicka, who enters the race with nothing more than name recognition, having been not having been, but being the wife of Don Ruzicka, a previous legislator from Lawrence County. When Don was elected to the state legislature, Julie went down and joined the Central Committee, or ran for a position on the Central Committee, or however it is you get on to the Central Committee. And when she went to her first meeting, they asked her to be secretary of the Central Committee, and she said yes. She was then made secretary of the Central Committee and never attended another meeting after that.
And that is common, actually.
Yeah, I think it is. I would hope it's not common of someone who has dreams of becoming a state legislator in the future. But I don't know that really Julie had any dreams of becoming a state legislator until someone from Tim Jones's office gave her a call and said, "Hey, how about let's try to bump this Mike Moon guy out of the picture."
This would look good on your resume. And you know, the committees, in my opinion, should meet on a monthly basis, at least most months. Howell County, which includes Willow Springs and West Plains, they meet every 2 years.
Oh,
and,
my.
And, you know...
Basically to talk about the upcoming House of Representatives election.
Mm-hmm. And, And I suspect some of the folks there kind of get together unofficially to decide who they want to support. But it really seems, you know, contrary to the public interest for them to meet only every 2 years. And I don't live in that county, but I do have friends who do. And, in fact, some of them are actually running for contested committee positions in that county. And one of the things they would like to see happen is more regular meetings and more public participation.
Right.
And I've always admired the Texas County Republican Committee because they changed their rules to allow voting on most issues by any party member. You did not have to be a committee person appointed or elected. For most issues, they were encouraging more people to get active with the Republican Party in that county. Mm. And their membership has grown by leaps and bounds in the last few years. And they have a very active Republican women's group, and they send out a very nice newsletter every month. So if anybody from Texas County is listening, you know, I do like what y'all are doing. And I recommended to a friend in the Constitution Party that they take a look at what the Texas County Republicans were doing to use as a model for growing their party. You know, it seems to work for them. No. Though I'm sure with every county committee we have some, you know, behind-the-scenes wheeling and dealing going on.
Oh, yeah.
That might shock you to hear me say that, but I'm sure it happens. Well, kind of like Casablanca, when the French policeman walked into Rick's bar and said, gambling here? I'm shocked. You know, behind-the-scenes wheeling and dealing going on. I'm shocked.
Exactly. Okay, folks, this thing's going to be over on Tuesday. Don't forget to get out and vote. Mike and I have been chatting around about how the Republican Party works. We're going to come back after the break. If you're interested in getting in your side of the story, this is one last chance, 347-677-1835. Give us a call. Make your stand on these ballot questions or get a plug-in for your favorite legislator. You've got a listening audience here. You've got a chance to have your say. 347-677-1835. After the break, right back to that.
Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
That can save your life. The Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16th and 17th at the DoubleTree Hotel in Springfield, Missouri. Learn about long-term storage food, water filtration, solar power, firearms for survival, wilderness survival, and ways to protect you and your family during an emergency. Vendor tables still available. The phone number to call, 417-264-2435. 417-264-2435. PreppersandPatriots.net.
Right, Mike. Let's get a little truth in advertising here right away and make sure that we've just not told a little fib. There are, in fact, vendor tables still available.
Last I checked, there were four.
Okay.
Though I did get a call right before the show and have to call a fellow back when it's over. So there might only be three after 9 o'clock
okay.
tonight.
That's in 2 weeks, vendors. 2 weeks. You've got 2 weeks to sew up one of those three tables. So if you're interested in being representative at the Preppers and Patriots Expo in Springfield, Missouri, that thing is going to be very, very well attended. If you're interested, get a hold of Mike. We'll be going over the details of that in the last half of the show. Mike, let's just jump right into it here. What I want to do tonight, if it's all right with you, is in a more calm, more quiet way, I'd like, especially on the things where you and I might have a difference of opinion, I'd like you to go ahead and just without any discussion, take as much time as you want and make your case on right to farm.
Okay. The first thing I'd have to say about right to farm is I'm going to be really glad when this election is over. This has become a very divisive issue among conservatives, libertarians, and liberty lovers. The Libertarian Party and the Constitution Party are both firmly against it. The Republican Party is firmly for it. And the Democratic Party is firmly against it, though... the Attorney General, who is a Democrat, is for it. I suspect that's looking for votes because he wants to be governor. And I noticed many of the very liberal office holders in the Kansas City area, some of the congressmen, who are all Democrats, are now for it. And, you know, that really surprised me a lot. I'm not sure of the reasoning there. I became involved with what they call right to farm about a year and a half ago when it was in the state legislature. And several of us in the Property Rights Coalition had concerns about the wording on the original bill. Actually, Dorian Hannes, Bob Parker, Mike Evans, who was with us last night, and I were involved in a conference call with the president of the group Missouri Farmers Care, an umbrella group made up of a lot of organizations, including the Soybean Growers, the Cattlemen's Association, the Corn Growers, the Farm Bureau, etc. And they were supporting it, and also now Congressman Jason Smith, who was in the state legislature and was one of the sponsors, his chief of staff. They agreed to remove the words use of modern technology from that bill, where it discusses farming and ranching practices being preserved. I can't remember the exact wording. And that relieved some of our concerns because we thought those words in there were a wide open door for requiring RFID chips, which had been very controversial the previous year, and which we were not in favor of. And also, we believe that would make it impossible to ever do anything to fight genetically engineered or modified or GMO seeds and foods. The argument could be made that it would even make it hard to require labeling, because you could argue that that was inhibiting the marketing of the product of farming. When they removed that, some of our concerns went away, but not all. We still believed that the bill itself was unnecessary, and it was being sold as a way to protect farmers from the Humane Society of the United States, PETA, and other, quote, out-of-state animal rights activists, unquote. We were told constantly that that was the reason for having the constitutional amendment. I remember asking those two gentlemen on the conference call why they simply didn't pass a bill, a normal law, normal legislation that would directly address the possible problem of out-of-state animal rights activists. They told me at the time that if they did that, it would not pass. It would not pass the legislature. My response was, then work harder to pass it, to get us to help you to pass it, or come up with a better bill. But amending the Constitution should never be taken lightly, because it can be interpreted in many different ways by judges and also at times by state regulatory agencies. And this was very near the time that Morningland Dairy, a non-pasteurized cheese-making family-owned business with a 35-year history and never anyone getting sick and a history of following state laws, had been destroyed by the State Milk Board, a regulatory agency, apparently legally, but certainly not morally. And I would have to say that we had a lot of fear of, and still do have fear, of the potential problems with the courts and with regulatory agencies. The other side seemed to have fear of HSUS, PETA, and other groups like that. So in my opinion, both groups that are strongly for or against are ruled by fear of either one group or group of groups or another. On my side, I fear Monsanto. On the other side, they fear HSUS. It gets down to who you fear more at times. The other folks have consistently maintained that this will provide clear protection from the group that they fear. They haven't sold me on that idea yet. And in all honesty, I believe I found an awful lot of deceptive practices being used by the promoters of the other side, a lot of campaign contributions being made to office holders who were supporting it by the group that I happen to fear. And I suspected that, you know, I have no proof, but I suspect that they're, you know, the guy standing behind the curtain. Is that a good summary?
That's a good summary. Thank you very much. I'm in favor of the right to farm. I think the answer to why don't we just pass a law is clearly, in my mind, that the majority of damage that has been done, and I'm flashing back to Prop B, I'm flashing back to the current trend to try to limit sow breeding and some of the limits that they're trying to place on chicken holding. Most of this is done by legislative or by public initiative, which can't be legislated away. You can't, I mean, you can pass a law that says everyone has a right to farm. You can pass a law that says you can have as many puppies as you want in a small area, but you cannot escape having to change that law or even having to change the Constitution when a initiative reaches Jefferson City. I don't like the idea, as we did with Proposition B, of putting the legislature in a position where they routinely go back behind an initiative and undo it. As much as I like the right to carry concealed weapons, I thought it absolutely arrogant of the legislature, after an initiative vote, after the people of Missouri said no, to go along 6 months later and say, well, you people obviously don't know what you're talking about. We're going to do it anyway. I didn't like Proposition B. I didn't like the puppy mill bill, but I thought it arrogant of the legislature to come along almost immediately after the puppy mill vote and undo it. Those things have to be done, but I don't like the idea of a legislature doing that as a routine. I think that what happens is if you can enshrine this in the Constitution, well, I don't think what happens. I know what happens. If you can enshrine this the way it's worded in the Constitution, then Proposition B, when the initiative reaches Jefferson City, never gets to a ballot because it's unconstitutional. The biggest problem that I hear from detractors, and I had this discussion quite a bit today with some people who I like very much, who are opposed to it, the opposition generally has a two-pronged attack. And one of them is with definition. This leaves the definition of what a rancher and what a farmer is a little gray. This leaves the court able to make a definition. Well, you don't get to include a dictionary and a thesaurus with every piece of legislation. I don't have a problem with the lack of definition. I don't have a problem with the courts. I don't have a problem with any of that. Quite frankly, it is the legislature's job to come along and define these things as it needs to be done. If a court goes awry in their definitions, then the legislature gets to come back and put the court in its place.
Caller, can you hear me?
You need to put you yellow too, Mike. Needs
right.
to come back and put the... definition. Well, you know, I've heard plenty of examples of people who... hold on, let's... Hey, caller, you're on the air. What you got?
Hi, this is Dwayne Lester. I wanted to talk a bit about, I think I was supposed to call in earlier about 7:15, and that's my fault. I apologize for that. But regarding Amendment 1, I've spoken to the people who have helped write this bill, and this has nothing to do with Monsanto. It has nothing to do with Chinese farmers. What this has to do is with the HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, and protecting Missouri farmers against these guys. And have you talked much about what they did out in California and how that's motivated Chris Koster to support this?
No, I haven't.
Okay, this is what I use to explain this. In California, the HSUS went in there and they passed, they got a law passed that changed the way California's egg farmers had to operate. And those changes greatly increased the cost of producing eggs in California. It didn't, however, increase the cost of producing eggs in Missouri. And we export millions of eggs to California. So Missouri eggs going into California cost less than California eggs produced locally. And so the California General Assembly passed a law that said if you are going to sell eggs in California, you have to abide by California's laws for egg production. Well, Missouri doesn't have to follow California's laws. That's just wrong. That's why Chris Koster is suing them. If Chris Koster wins, then Missouri could sell eggs in California for less than what California farmers can make them for, so California farmers are essentially going to have to go out of business or operate at a loss until they do. And that's what the HSUS is all about. The HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, does not operate dog kennels. They do not rescue kitties. They are all about the end of animal agriculture in America and around the world. And that's what Amendment 1 is supposed to do. It is supposed to protect Missouri farmers from people like this, from this organization specifically, because what they will do is they will spend millions in Kansas City and St. Louis and Columbia getting the urban voters to vote for laws that they have no idea how they will impact the rural farmer. And that's part of how they got Prop B passed, and that's why the law is a little bit vague, because they don't know what the HSUS is going to try next. But if they say, look, we've got this amendment that says we can operate as, you know, farmers, that's kind of the catch-all against that operation. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Now, I have a question for you. The section, which will now be Section 20 or 35 of Article 1 of the Constitution, it'll be the last now and 35th section of Article 1, the actual Constitution Bill of Rights for the Missouri State Constitution, is going to read that agriculture, which provides food, energy, health benefits, and security, is the foundation and stabilizing force of the Missouri economy. To protect this vital... That's not even a complete sentence, by the way. To protect this vital sector of Missouri's economy, the right of farmers and ranchers to engage in farming and ranching practices shall be forever guaranteed in this state, subject to duly authorized powers, if any, conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri. Now, getting away from SHUS for a minute, will this protect me from DNR?
That's an excellent question. You know, that's something I hadn't even considered. It would make sense that it would.
Will the state of Missouri now come to my defense when the United States Department of Agriculture comes down here and tries to enforce something, or when the EPA comes down here and tries to enforce something crazy on me?
I would assume that they would say the supremacy clause, that, you know, the federal government has the power to do that. You know, if you know me, you know that the EPA, in my opinion, is an unconstitutional organization, shouldn't exist in the first place. I don't have anything wrong. I don't have any problem with a state saying this is how we're going to, you know, these are our environmental policies, but there's nothing in the Constitution that says the federal government should be able to do that.
Well, we're all in agreement on that. What I'm asking you is, does this, what I'm looking for, Dwayne, and have been looking for years and years on this show, as our listeners know, is for the state of Missouri to get the balls to finally stand up to the federal government and say, we are the sovereign state of Missouri, and we are not going to let you do this to our citizens. Is this a move in that direction?
I would say with the right governor, you could see that. I hesitate to say this next General Assembly. I don't know how much of a, you know, how testicular fortitude our next speaker will be. I don't know him that well. it would definitely be a step, and it's not a step backwards, that's for sure. This amendment is not something that says, here, let us give up more of our power. This is something that says, no, you can't go any farther than this right here.
See, clearly, so in my mind, clearly, in my mind, those words that I just read limit any regulation to the duly authorized powers conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri. Well, DNR ain't in Article 6.
Hmm.
You know?
No, that's something I hadn't looked at or hadn't considered, so I'm hesitant to comment on it.
Now, I don't have a problem with that clause. A lot of people who are opposed to this have a problem with that clause. But I don't have a problem with the citizens of the city of Springfield, a duly authorized power conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri, telling me I can or can't have chickens, can or can't have roosters, can or can't breed lions, Bengal tigers in my backyard, or can or can't in my three-quarters of an acre back lot have six breeding sows. I don't have any problem with the city of Springfield or the local powers making those kinds of decisions. The more local, the better in those kinds of decisions, in my mind.
Right. No, I agree completely. And I think that's part of the opposition has been putting out there, too, that when this passes, these big hog operations can go wherever they want, and local control can't stop them. And that's just not the facts. The local control will be, if anything, will be stronger. They're not saying cities and counties have to give up all their regulatory or all their power at all. Simply saying we're not going to allow someone to come in and say, you have to have a certain number of acres per cow, and all of your chickens need to be free range. And as a matter of fact, stop slaughtering goats for food. You know,
right.
I don't know. I think the HSUS has done a very good job putting out a lot of disinformation and getting people riled up on things that they don't need to be riled up on. And that's really what they do. That's their MO.
Well, okay, Mike. In my discussion with Dwayne there, I've kind of made my points. And do you have anything for Dwayne, or any questions or comments? Or
well, I would have one question and a couple of comments. this has been extremely divisive among liberty-minded people.
So
I'm really going to be glad when it's over, regardless of how it goes. I actually had somebody on Facebook yesterday call me a liberal. I've never been so insulted in my life. Another comment, actually, is I went to a meeting in West Plains last week with some friends. Mike Evans was with me. And I brought a state representative to task because on a radio program the day before, he had made a statement that the people against it were the HSUS, and the people that were with the HSUS and just them, and all farmers were for it. And I know a great many small farmers who have no love for the HSUS who are opposed to this and do plan on voting no. And I knew that he knew this because we had discussions before. And I called him on it, and frankly, he finally just said, well, that was his opinion. Even though he knew it was not a fact. Well, what do you call somebody who says something is fact when they know, in fact, it is not a fact? You know?
Liberal.
Or a liar. And,
yeah.
You know, so I'm actually still waiting for an apology, Sean Rhodes, for that statement, because we never got it, okay, if you're listening. Now, I do think that a lot of this comes down to fear, again, on both sides. I fear Monsanto and their elk, and the other side fears HSUS more than they do Monsanto. What is your opinion, Dwayne, of how this would affect possible restriction in the future of genetically modified animals or plants or the labeling of GMOs?
You know, that's
in other words,
that's one
if we're
things
able
that,
to get movement together... Okay. Do you think this would have any effect at all?
That's a good question, one I hadn't pondered.
Monsanto
has some deep pockets, and I could see them having lawyers that would say, look, Amendment 1 covers whatever we're doing. I could see opponents also saying, look, this is breaking technology. This is all new, and this isn't covered by Amendment 1 because this is not farming. This is not ranching. This is molecular biology. This is a whole new kind of thing here going on. So, it's one of those things that will be in court. I guarantee it. And there's rarely an amendment to the Constitution that doesn't go to court. You know, the Second Amendment goes to court all the time. Nobody says they shouldn't have passed it. You know what I mean? There will be court cases on this. You will see Monsanto doing that. Not every farmer supports this. Sean said that, he was wrong.
No, not every, but it will go to court on this specific issue, Duane, only if Missouri citizens get around to trying to ban GMOs. I don't see this getting in the way of labeling, although Mike did bring up, a point where if you get, which I'm sure will start working early in the next session, a bill to liberalize farmer-to-consumer sales, I believe labeling could then become an issue or a restriction to that marketing. We'll find out. I don't see any way to read this, though, that doesn't lead you to believe that without another constitutional amendment, if Missouri citizens ever wanted to ban GMO, that would be unconstitutional the day after this is printed.
Yeah, I don't know what to say there. I'm telling you, I can tell you I expect it to happen. I expect it to go to court,
that constitutional question won't be about Monsanto. It'll be about me, the farmer, and whether or not I have a right to my Roundup Ready corn or my genetically modified corn or my drought resistant soybean or my whatever the modification is.
Right.
That will be the issue. It won't be about Monsanto, it'll be about me, the individual farmer. And I think that trying to ban me from using any product that furthers my right to farmers and ranchers to engage in farming and ranching practices would be unconstitutional. I don't have any objection to the fact, Mike, that 10 years down the road, if we want to ban GMOs, we come back with another constitutional amendment to do so. I don't have a problem with that. I don't look at the state constitution as quite as hard to manage as the federal constitution. I think that a state, you build a small house, you want to be able to change that once in a while. You build a big house, you want that to be harder to change and more concrete. I don't have any problem with changing changing the state constitution as much as we need to. We the citizens own that. It's not a big state cooperative like the federal constitution is. So I think 10 years from now, if we want to ban GMOs, we've just fixed the constitution again.
Okay. I was just reading the Constitution Party's official stance on it. I didn't have the Libertarian Party's stance in front of me. And it looks as though the objections they had, you all have covered. It is primarily that citizens of Missouri already have the right to farm and ranch. It's a natural right possessed from birth. The permission of the state is not needed. The wording of the ballot language and that in the actual new section of law is different. That is true. It is different. What is the definition of agricultural production and ranching practices or farming and ranching practices? The language is vague and ambiguous. The meaning of these words left be determined by the legislature and or the courts. Therefore, farming or ranching will mean whatever government determines it will mean. And they say by far the largest problem in the proposed amendment is the words subject to duly authorized powers, if any, conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri. And they point out it refers to local governments and say that passage of this amendment would guarantee the right to farm and ranch subject to the whims of local governments. So that's their take on it.
And yeah.
And the language, by the way, is different. But that language is determined, I found out, by the Secretary of State of Missouri. I do not like that. I think it should be the exact language of the amendment on the ballot, even if it wastes some paper. But
well,
that is an issue to be taken up later.
I agree with that. But, in fact, Mike, this particular ballot question was written by the legislature, not by the Secretary of State. The legislature learned a valuable lesson in the last session and almost never lets the Secretary of State write ballot language anymore.
Oh. If it was the legislature, then it should have been the exact language of the amendment.
I agree.
Or the ballot language.
I agree. Now, you get into
trouble.
Well,
fellas, I got to let you go. I do apologize again for calling in so late.
That's okay, Dwayne. Thank you.
You know how it is. Sometimes you get in the middle of something and you lose track of time, and that's what happened tonight. I am sorry.
Well, that's okay. You weren't the only one late tonight. Thank you for coming along. Thanks for weighing in, and we appreciate your time and your opinion, Dwayne.
Dwayne, why don't you give a plug to the Missouri? Give a plug for the Missouri Torch?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The MissouriTorch.com is one of the few center-right political websites focused only on Missouri politics, and I try to update it every day, at least if it's just links. But I try to, at least give a conservative voice to a very left-wing media in Missouri.
And you do a wonderful job. I read it every morning.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Have a good night, guys.
Take care. And actually, as far as the Missouri Torch goes, I found out about it originally from Lieutenant Governor Kinder, who also reads it every day. I'd imagine an awful lot of our elected officials do, too.
Yes. I want to... I want to flash back to the Constitution Party. Review that Constitution Party objection again real quick, and then we'll move on.
Looks like we have a caller waiting, too.
He's just listening.
Okay. Let's see. They say there are several problems with the amendment. Citizens of Missouri already have the right to farm and ranch, a natural right possessed from birth. The permission of the state is not needed. The wording in the ballot language is different from the wording in the actual amendment. The meaning of the words would have to be determined by the courts or the legislature. And the largest problem, they say, is in the words subject to duly authorized powers, if any, conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri, which they say means the right to farm and ranch would be subject to the whims of local government.
Okay. The only problem I have with that we haven't already addressed is that the definition of a constitutional republic is that our legislative representatives make those definitions. I mean, if you are a Constitution Party, it seems to me like it's an anti-constitutional argument to say that there's a problem with something because the legislature is going to make the definitions. The basic definition of a democratic or a constitutional republic is that we elect representatives to do just that.
And that is true. Last night we were throwing around the word democracy quite a bit, and I pointed out that we are not a democracy.
Right.
And probably don't want to be.
Right.
During the time of the founding, democracy was a bad word. It referred to, in their minds, the mobs of the French Revolution who were guillotining heads off.
Right.
And in fact, Thomas Jefferson's party was originally called the Democratic Republicans, but they shortened it to Republicans, the party that is today the Democrats.
Right.
Because Democratic in their meant mob rule to them. And I like the definition that democracy is three wolves and a sheep deciding on what is for them.
Yep. Okay, my forecast is 70-30. This one falls.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit closer, but I do think it's going to win. I'd say 55-60.
You think it's going to win? Oh, really?
I think Amendment 1 will pass.
I think Amendment 1 will fall. I think it will fall 70-30, yeah. You've got
You know, if it does, it's going to be primarily the urban areas voting against it, don't you think?
Well, I look at it. I look at it as both as left and right of the political spectrum. The entire left is going to vote against it, with the exception of maybe five people, and the right is split. So that's where I'm coming up with the 70-30. You know, I've got all of my liberal friends voting against it, and half my conservative friends voting against it.
I was just thinking of the large numbers of people in Kansas City and St. Louis, and
who are all those liberal people that are all going to vote?
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you're right. And then, of course, in Springfield, there's a very active group fighting it.
Yes.
Rural Chapel has been very outspoken.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many organic farmers. I don't know how many organic farmers we have out there, but all of them I know are against it. You know, we had Jerry Gittle on last week from Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds.
Uh-huh.
And all the heirloom companies are against it.
Are against it.
You might
be right. Okay. Amendment 5. I think you and I are in agreement on that, so let's just review it real quick. If anybody wants to call in on Amendment 5, we're still at 347-677-1835. Amendment 5, the right to bear arms. I'm going to just, again, because this is a quick read, I'm just going to read it again. All it does is add a few words and subtract a few words from what is already Article 1, Section 23 of the Missouri Constitution, Article 1 again being the Bill of Rights of the Constitution of Missouri. Section 23 will, after Tuesday, read that the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms, ammunition, and accessories typical to the normal function of such arms in defense of his home, person, family, and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of the civil power, shall not be questioned. The rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. Any restriction to these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny, and the state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement. Nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent the General Assembly from enacting general laws which limit the rights of convicted violent felons or those adjudicated by a court to be a danger to self or others as a result of mental disorder or mental infirmity. What do you think of that, Mike?
I am in favor of this, and actually most folks I know are in favor of it. I like the idea of strengthening the Second Amendment. If the federal government should ever go wonky or wonkier, and we wind up with Second Amendment restrictions on the federal side, this would be a layer of protection for Missourians. I also like the fact that it would guarantee a hearing before a judge for someone who is declared mentally incompetent, a danger to themselves or others. At the moment, if the VA were to declare that a person, a veteran with PTSD, was not fit to own a weapon, that would be enough. This would force the state to allow them to have their day in front of a judge and force the state to prove that they were a danger. And if the particular mental illness that they were suffering from or condition could be relieved or cured in the future, then I am assuming they would be able to go back in front of that judge and get those rights restored. I like that. Also, we talked about their mentioning of violent felons, restricting violent felons' firearms privileges, which implies that nonviolent felons, such as our friend Mike Evans, very long story there, but, you know, the federal government went after him and used a tax beef, and they forced a plea bargain by threatening to file the same charge against, you know, his wife, and it had already cost him thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars. He hacked off the ATF is what he did. Well, now he's restricted from owning a weapon, and he's a nonviolent felon. And I don't believe that's right, or as Senator Cunningham said last night, he didn't like the fact that someone who was 20 years old and got caught with, you know, a bag of marijuana, who might be 40 years old today, wanted to take his son squirrel hunting, cannot do it legally. You know, if a person is of such a danger that they should never legally have a weapon again, that should be included in the original sentence that they are given, in my opinion. And if they're not that dangerous, no, that should not be an issue. And then that's leaving out the fact that, you know, the people that are committing the gun crimes tend to be gang members, violent felons who ignore the laws anyway. So this will really only be applying to law-abiding citizens. So I like that aspect of it. I do have the Constitution Party's platform in front of me, and they are actually not in favor of this.
Correct.
And let me see. They are saying, because the very first line reads that the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms, ammunition, and accessories typical to the normal function of such arms. And they say, what is a normal function? There is no definition of normal function in state statutes. This will be subject to future interpretations. Two, the rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. Unalienable rights which cannot be given away or given up. The next line, they say, reads, any restriction on these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny. So these rights are unalienable unless they are restricted, apparently, in which case the restrictions will be subject to strict scrutiny. Who will impose restrictions? Who will provide the scrutiny for said restrictions? Nothing in this amendment shall be construed to prevent the passage of general laws by the General Assembly that limits such rights for convicted violent felons or persons adjudged to be a danger to self or others as the result of a mental disorder or mental infirmity. While many will see this language, they say, as reasonable, allowing government to determine who can possess firearms is fraught with unseen and unknown danger. Historical cases of government using mental illness as an excuse to detain and imprison its citizens are many, and they recommend a no vote. Now, they are correct on government using mental illness as a way to simply lock up dissidents. In the Soviet Union, and in Nazi Germany, and in some dictatorships today. And I am sure that that has happened at times in the United States, though it's not as widespread. I can understand that objection more than I can understand their first two objections, which I think are being nitpicky. However, I think this is a much better law than what we have now regarding this. And, you know, I think government has to be able to restrict people who are a danger to themselves or others. I simply want a very high standard placed on the authority, the judge who is making that determination. I don't want it to be taken lightly.
And I think I agree with you. You have that here with the strict scrutiny. In case there are listeners out there that don't quite have a handle on what strict scrutiny is, there are several levels, and the court has invented itself a hierarchy of how it hears cases. In my mind, every case the court hears that is government versus individual ought to be heard with strict scrutiny. But There is a level that the court applies when it's looking where the government just has to prove that it has an overwhelming interest in something. And then the levels rise up to strict scrutiny, where everything is interpreted in favor of the individual unless the government can show the government basically has to show that the whole country is going to fall apart if this person is allowed to eavesdrop on conversations in the National Security Council meetings or whatever it is. I like that myself, and I don't understand. I certainly don't understand the Constitution Party's objection to, and I find it more than nitpicky. Currently, Section 23 of Article 1 reads that the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms in defense of his home, person, and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of the civil power, shall not be questioned. So currently, the Constitution just says that you have a right to bear arms. It makes no mention currently of your right to bear ammunition. It makes no mention of your right to bear flash suppressors or anything else that the government might want to regulate. It just makes mention of your right to bear arms. They've added these words because of the government's attempts to regulate ammunition, because of the government's attempts to regulate accessories, slings, large clips. I see this as just a further protection myself.
How this would affect other weapons, swords, knives, blackjacks.
Well, you know, and I get into that discussion frequently with my friends, Mike, and my friends on the right, and I believe this is a good amendment. So we're going to chase a rabbit here for a minute, though. You've got these folks on the left who believe that guns are evil things and that we need to allow the government to restrict the use of guns. You have people on the right who say, no, my right to bear arms is unalienable. The government cannot do a single thing to prevent me from carrying weapons. Well, you know, start asking that guy a question. It's easy to ask the person on the left questions and box them into a corner. But ask this guy on the right that wants to talk about God-given rights as though a right to bear arms came down off of Mount Sinai carved in stone. Ask him what he thinks about whether or not I can plant a Claymore mine in my front yard to keep the neighbor kids out. Ask him, you know, whether he thinks I can drive a Sherman tank down the street. Ask him if he thinks I can keep a nuclear bomb in my basement. If you are correctly contending that the main purpose, one of the main purposes of the Second Amendment, is to protect citizens from the government, then you have to be willing to go all the way to saying that I've got to have at least as powerful a weapon as the federal government has. So why can't I set up an M60 on the front porch of my house? Clearly, at some level, someone, and again, here we come back to what level of government. Someone has to draw the line. You can't have Claymore mines. You can't lob hand grenades down the street. So I don't have any problem with accessories typical to the normal function of such arms. Still there, Mike?
I'm here, yeah. I didn't hear you for a second.
Oh. So, yeah, I don't have any problem with it exactly the way it's worded. I think it's very strong. The other thing is, you know, and the Constitution Party is huge on this, is this or that isn't a function of government. This or that isn't a function of government. And that's their cry and hue for most of these things. Well, the function of government, the function of the state of Missouri's government is written in the Constitution. That's where we, the citizens, define what our government can do, what it cannot do, and what it must do. And then there's a big gray area in between of can-dos that we elect representatives to go to Jefferson City and do or not do. But we definitely use the Constitution to define what the government cannot do and what the government must do. I see this as a government must do. I see this as defining as a function of the government defending me and my rights against any encroachment. I like that a lot.
I agree. I agree with you on that. You were talking about the Claymore mine or the machine gun or the Sherman tank earlier. The federal government did not make ownership of machine guns illegal. They simply required a license or a tax be paid,
right.
that is so expensive that very few people bother with it.
Right.
That question of whether or not you could legally own one, I don't believe it's come up in court yet on the federal or state level.
Well, and all I'm saying is that clearly someone draws a line. Clearly someone says, yes, you can, clearly you can't have a nuclear bomb in your basement. Clearly you can't erect Claymore mines in your front yard. What the right wants to do is say, okay, well, we're the ones who decide where to draw the line. And what the left wants to do is say, okay, we're the ones who decide where to draw the line. And I'm all about the constitutional republic and us at the lowest level of government possible, and definitely never at the federal level as per the Second Amendment being the ones that draw the line.
I agree.
And people tend to, Mike, and we talk about this a lot on the State Sovereignty Show, people tend to confuse constitutions when they talk about this back and forth. The Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, as well as any of the first 10 amendments, are one-way applicable.
Restrictions on the Congress, on the federal government.
Restrictions on the federal government, that's correct. And that's always important to remember. The state of Missouri then, as did most states, mimicked that protection when they wrote their constitution. There are two states that don't have this protection in their constitution, but the state of Missouri mimicked that protection in their constitution, and that's fine. We are protected by the state of Missouri in our right to bear arms. Until this amendment passed, there was a caveat in there saying that didn't justify the wearing of concealed weapons, opening the door for even Section 6 local authorities to restrict in some way that right, and denying it to all Missourians until we statutorily allowed it about 10 years ago. The current Constitution leaves local municipalities, local powers, able to completely outlaw any open carry. That problem goes away when this passes. You have, and as you've already stated, you have sheriffs out here making decisions that a guy who's had 3 DWIs can't have a concealed carry permit. That problem goes away. You have laws, in fact, on the books in the state of Missouri that say that a guy who was convicted of misdemeanor spousal abuse can't carry a concealed weapon. That problem goes away. I like it a lot.
You know, a couple of the small towns near me have a strange situation, I think, now, in that they outlaw open carry of firearms unless you have a concealed carry permit, in which case you can carry openly.
Right.
Doesn't that seem odd?
It does. It does.
And your belief is that this would strike down the local ordinances against open carry?
Oh, I think it absolutely would. I mean, the no restrictions means no restrictions shall not be questioned means shall not be questioned. The rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. Any restriction to these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny. The state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights. I don't see anything in there saying that that you can't open carry. All I see is a wide open door there, absolutely wide open door, unless you are a convicted violent felon or you are adjudicated by a court to be a danger to yourself or others.
Okay, so it moves us a little closer to the Arizona model.
I think it might put us there.
Well, I consider that a good thing.
Yeah. Okay.
By the way, what do you know what the laws are right now in Springfield regarding open carry? I know years ago it was legal. Someone told me they had outlawed open carry, but then I have noticed people carrying openly in you know certain places, restaurants, and so on.
Yeah.
Any idea
yeah.
what the laws are there?
It's not against the law in Springfield to open carry. I believe.
Okay.
I believe, like the town near you, that to carry at all, you need a concealed carry permit. I don't believe that without a concealed carry permit, which involves the clearance by the local sheriff, I don't believe you can carry.
Okay. We had a vendor at the Go Green Festival who actually asked me about that, and I called the local police chief. This fellow...
Who didn't know the answer, right?
Well, you know, he did. I was impressed.
Oh, okay.
New police chief, and I guess he'd been reading the laws. And that was, well, the city of Thayer, and they have that ordinance, no open carry unless you have a concealed carry permit. But the particular vendor who was asking, who likes to wear a 1911 45, was also a reserve deputy sheriff in his jurisdiction in another state. So he said he would instruct his officers that it was okay for that guy to open carry, provided his badge was displayed on his belt next to the gun. So,
right.
You know, he was willing to make some exceptions. But I found that interesting.
All right, we're up against a quick break. We're going to come back. The two hard ones are down. We've got three more left, but they're easy ones. We're going to cover them. If you want to weigh in, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835, right after the break.
Come the archers, come the infantry, come the archers of hell. This is why we
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Opinion on the State Sovereignty Show at 347-677-1835 before the final decisions are made on Tuesday. I'll be watching the decisions roll in. I'm going down to a Mike Moon's watch party down in Mount Vernon on Tuesday night, so I'll be watching with interest as these things roll in. I forgot to make my projection on 5. I think 5 passes about 60-40, maybe a little closer. What do you think, Mike?
I believe it's definitely going to pass. I'd say 60-40 is pretty good. Give me a call, by the way, when the results come in on Mike Moon, if you would.
Oh, sure. Sure, will do. Will do. Okay, 7 is a no-brainer, I think, for all of our listening audience anyway, as well as for you and I, and that is, should we take a 3/4 cent tax out of every dollar you spend, in addition to what we already take, and forward that money to the Missouri Department of Transportation for a specified list of WANA dues that they have. Mike Cunningham came along last night and made some interesting points and very truthful points. That is that MoDOT's, unlike every other state agency, their revenue is actually going down. People are buying less gas. Cars are burning less gas. The gas tax is the primary source of funding for MoDOT, although they do also get funding from road use taxes, which I think, if I read correctly in the summary, are fairly stable. And as a share of the vehicle, new vehicle sales tax, which revenue is also decreasing. So MoDOT's funding or revenue stream is actually decreasing as costs go up. I'm still a huge no on this, a huge no. I hope everyone else is too. The idea in my mind is that, A, MoDOT has shown themselves to be a poor, poor steward of the money that we already give them. They use it poorly. They contract poorly. They allocate poorly. They make poor choices and poor decisions with the money that we already give them. I am holding out, and I don't doubt, I do not doubt for a moment that when it's all said and done, when we trim the fat, when we curtail the waste, when we make MoDOT more responsible, that they will still need more money. But you come and ask me for more money after you've streamlined the process. I want the legislature back in the process. Mike Cunningham made an argument last night that we used to do it that way, that MoDOT was just like most other executive bureaus, subject of the legislature. That all of their dollars were specifically appropriated by the legislature, and that what that did was it introduced too much politics into the problem. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I'll vote yes for building an overpass to your city if you'll vote yes for building a highway exit at my town. In my mind, Mike, and then it's your turn, in my mind, solving that problem, and that is a problem, by throwing the baby out with the bathwater is the wrong answer. If you've got that kind of a politics problem going on, you, the people, take ownership of the political process and you solve that problem. You don't
exactly.
solve it, in my mind, by taking several million dollars and just channeling it to an unregulated, unlegislatively watchdogged bureau without any appropriation at all. Your go, Mike.
MoDOT needs adult supervision.
Yes.
MoDOT is wasteful. This is the organization that will have five people working on a project. One will be manipulating the shovel. The other four will be standing there smoking, drinking sodas, and supervising him. This group wastes time, they waste labor, they waste our tax dollars, and they need to streamline, as you said. The problem with too much politics here, Mike made a good point, but the problem is cleaning up our political system so that we don't have these back-scratching deals going on and having total transparency. So that the public knows, and then the public will not allow it. They will throw the bums out if they're
right.
doing that. I see a couple of good points. Constitution Party is against this, and they say the passage of this amendment will transfer a major portion of MoDOT funding from those who use the roads to every citizen in Missouri, making a purchase of goods and services. That's true. But, everyone benefits. To me, that's not that strong an argument. Everyone benefits from the roads.
Yeah.
But they do say this additional revenue can be used for expanding rail service, bike lanes, and other things.
That's a real problem.
Related to roads and bridges. The ballot language contains the phrase transportation projects. That is true. And they also point out MoDOT says it has a list of projects that need to be done, and this additional revenue would fund those projects. Yet MoDOT held hearings around the state to ask citizens how they wanted MoDOT to spend the additional revenue. So were they simply teasing the citizens? Was this an additional waste of money since they already had a list of projects? I know that according to my presiding commissioner in my county, MoDOT was trying to bribe the county commissioners to get their support by giving them a list of the projects that they planned on completing in their counties. And in my county, the biggest thing that we want is expansion of Highway 63, and that's not on the table for at least 10 years.
Right.
At least if this passes. They were wanting to do a few other minor little things that nobody cares about. A whit.
Right. Yeah.
And I keep coming back on waste to when I worked for a radio station in Springfield several years ago, which would sell airtime, one-hour pieces of time, to businesses to do their own radio show.
Right.
And MoDOT was buying several hours a week for the MoDOT radio program.
Sure.
Why in the world do our tax dollars need to be spent? Maybe they're arguing that they're trying to strengthen the local economy by circulating our tax money. That was a feel-good project, just like the signage. Mike said that was from a federal grant, or at least they told him that. But, that's a bad argument. It's still our tax dollars being wasted, whether it's federal tax dollars. They will say, well, if we don't take them, someone else will. Well, we need somebody at some point to stop and say enough's enough. We're not going to take it. And then shame the other states into not taking it too, or we're just going to keep wasting money on and on and on. I see nothing good that could come out of this, and we need to hold them accountable, make them quit wasting money, and then talk to them about more money if they need it in the future.
I think this one goes down.
Let them squirm.
I think this one goes down 70-30, if not 80-20, Mike.
Exactly. I think so. Nobody wants this that I've talked to, except MoDOT employees.
Now, I think maybe you and me and Mike Evans are the only ones in the state who don't want a veterans lottery ticket. We must hate veterans. That's Amendment 8. It is, I'm not going to read the entire amendment because it only changes a few words in a very long section of the Constitution. But basically what it does is changes the lottery section of the Constitution as it stands, that section saying that all this money has to go to education, to introduce a partitioned lottery section or game or group of tickets, the proceeds of which or the profits of which would go to veterans projects, and specifically, I believe, the veterans' homes.
I've taken informal surveys with folks I know, including quite a few veterans and spouses of veterans, and I've yet to find anyone in favor of this.
Oh, good, good.
Now, Mike Cunningham made a good point that the veterans' homes that this would fund are in need of funding.
Sure.
So I'd
sure.
say that's a problem to be taken up in the next legislative session. Find a way to fund these veterans' homes.
Yes.
But I do not believe a lottery is the way to do it for a lot of reasons. One is a belief that the government should not be involved in gambling, and that's not a moral issue. I could care less if somebody wants to go to the riverboats or down to Tunica or to Vegas. Or if they want to do online gambling, I could care less. But I don't believe the state should be involved in it. Any level of government should be involved in it. It is also a voluntary tax on the mathematically challenged. You can make the argument that the people who can least afford the lottery tickets are those who buy most of them. Some say that's entertainment. I think that's hogwash. And then I still have a bad taste in my mouth from the original lottery being passed so many years ago. I voted for it. I regret it now. They told me that it would help education. And my dad was a school teacher. I thought, hey, great, let's help education. When they got the lottery money in, they immediately removed the equivalent amount
right.
from the general fund that they normally gave to education.
Right.
And it has grown and grown and grown. They spend a tremendous amount of money on marketing, advertising, on their own bureaucracy that they have created. They contract out a lot of their lotto machines to an out-of-state company that charges an arm and a leg. And, I see nothing good whatsoever coming out of our existing lottery. I'd like to see it go away. And most veterans I know really resent being used as you know, the excuse for the shell game. And
it's gone. So. It's gone, Mike. I mean, speaking of the state being involved in gambling, it's gone as from the day when you voted on it, from a couple of instant scratcher tickets and one drawing a week, it's gone to a drawing a night. Three drawings or four drawings a night, the big drawings on two nights a week, and a bunch of people sitting around in a bar 24 hours a day playing Keno.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane.
The Constitution Party here actually, they say our state government should not be in the business of gambling at all. Creating a specialized lottery ticket for veterans will serve what purpose, they say? What are veteran-related projects and services? Mike Cunningham explained that.
Right.
This is an attempt by state government to trick people into giving more money to the state under the guise of helping veterans. I think that's true, an effort to trick people.
It is, yeah. And that's that shell game that you were talking about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a projection on what's going to happen to this. I don't see a lot of advertising one way or the other. I don't see any groups spending money trying to convince people to vote one way or the other on this thing. I really don't have a good feel for what's going to happen to that. I'm not sure anybody cares.
Well, an awful lot of people are going to walk into the voting booth. They're going to read the language, and they're going to say, well, it sounds like something that will help veterans, and vote for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Now, if it does pass, you know, it, to me it's not the end of the world because, as Mike Cunningham pointed out, it's a bad solution and a temporary solution. Their funding is going to go down, or the regular lottery that supposedly helps education will go down, and then teachers' groups and pro-education groups are going to be raising a ruckus over their lost revenue.
Right.
And, you know, maybe people will get in such an uproar that they'll do away with all the lotteries and go back to funding education and veterans' homes, both out of the general fund, as they did previously. And then people might actually have a little more money to pay the taxes to fund these projects if they're not wasting their money on lottery tickets.
I agree. Okay, so we're opposed to the lottery. Let's move on to the last one. We've got about 15 minutes here, and it is a pretty easy one in my mind. I believe we're both in agreement on this, but another just addition of a couple of words to an already existing section of Article 1, the Missouri Bill of Rights. It reads that the people shall be secure in their persons, paper, homes, and effects, and that's currently in the Constitution, and it adds the words, and electronic communications and data from unreasonable searches and seizures, and no warrant to search any place or seize any person or thing, adding now, or access electronic data or communication, shall issue without describing the place to be searched or the person or thing to be seized or the data or communication to be accessed as nearly as may be nor without probable cause supported by written oath or affirmation. And that's the extent of it. Mike, what do you think?
No brainer. I think this is going to pass by a wide margin. There will be the anti-NSA backlash because most folks are upset at the NSA turning inward and
right.
eavesdropping on Americans. And full disclosure, I used to work for them in the military. Back then, we listened to the Soviets. And that's what the NSA is there for, to listen to our potential enemies, not to listen to Americans. We've also had a lot of problems with policemen on routine traffic stops searching cell phones without warrants.
Right.
That has been deemed unconstitutional on the federal level. And cell phones these days are more than they were, you know, 5 years ago. They're little computers that hold sometimes people's entire life histories. And, you know, I don't know a single person who is not in favor of this, and that includes an awful lot of police officers and retired police officers.
Right.
Those I know believe in privacy, and they believe that a warrant should be required to go through a person's electronic communications. So I'm all for it.
You got the Constitutional Party stand on that?
This is the only one they're for. It just
okay.
says, yes, vote, good amendment.
Okay. I'm in agreement. I think it's a no-brainer. I think this one passes 70-30, maybe 80-20. Let's wrap that up. 347-677-1835, listeners. Mike, I wanna hear you tell us about Preppers and Patriots.
Well, the expo will be August 16th and 17th in Springfield, at the DoubleTree Hotel by Hilton at the corner of Glenstone and Kearney. The admission is $10, and that includes the entire weekend. So a person can come when we open at 9 o'clock on Saturday, stay all day, we end at 6, come back the next day, 9 a.m. on Sunday, and stay until 6. Works out to less than 50 cents, I think, per hour for a lot of good knowledge. We have in the ballroom room for 60 vendor tables, and then we have two areas with speakers. The vendors include people who sell medical supplies, long-term storage food like freeze-dried food, canned items, dehydrated items, folks who have outdoor equipment, camping equipment, water purification systems like the Berkey and the Aquapail, You know, I mentioned to one of the vendors on another show that it sounded like he had everything there except storm shelters, something to protect him from a tornado, and he pointed out that he has a catalog there. A person can order a storm shelter from him, so they're even offered. The speakers are covering sensible alternative energy, such as alcohol for fuel, making your own. Basically, you can make moonshine legally and burn it in a gasoline engine. Now, ethanol gets a lot of bad press because they're using corn right now and putting it in our gasoline. And that's really pretty stupid in a lot of ways. Corn is a very inefficient crop to use for alcohol. In Missouri, sugar beets are good. Sweet sorghum is good, and you can get five times the yield per acre. There's no waste because the byproduct is a high-protein, low-carb animal feed. And any gasoline engine will burn alcohol with some modifications. New cars that are flex fuel, no modifications needed. So we'll have folks that will explain that. Making or getting small steam engines to generate electricity for your home by burning wood, once again, scrap wood, firewood, solar power people, and they'll show you how to get off the grid in a do-it-yourself manner with solar panels, you know, or get partially off the grid. It can cost an awful lot of money to be totally solar, but not nearly as much just to have it as a supplement or a backup. And if we ever go through an ice storm again or the power is out, then you know, you can at least keep the freezers and refrigerator running and with, you know, a little bit of solar backup. We have Doug Breathour of Springfield coming with his pickup truck that uses the wood gas combustion system. He burns scrap wood. He picks up, I don't know where he gets it, probably lumber yards and out in the woods. But he doesn't have to buy his fuel at all, and that's the best way to get revenge on MoDOT right there. You don't pay any gasoline tax. And it actually meets EPA standards because he burns the wood, collects the fumes, and burns the fumes, the gas the wood makes. Converted an older pickup truck, early 90s, I believe, Dodge Dakota. And, you know, it's a fantastic technology. You can look at it, and if you want to make your own, there are places to get the plans to do it. Little welding skills are all that are needed. On survival medicine, we have Doc Bones and Nurse Amy coming from Miami, Florida. And they're very well known nationally. Doc Bones is an MD. His wife, Amy, is a nurse practitioner and certified midwife. And they speak and give classes on different aspects of medical treatment when there's no doctor available. Their goal is to make sure that every family has one qualified practitioner and caregiver. They also sell medical kits of all type at a very reasonable price. We have a local doctor from Branson, Dr. Jim Caesar, who will give a presentation on suturing. If you're with somebody who has a bad wound and no doctor around, following his methods, his instruction, and using his kit, you can suture the wound and probably save a life. And, you know, when you're sewing somebody up, they're going to scream from the pain, okay? So he does something that a lot of doctors don't do because he's a Missouri physician. He can give a prescription to lidocaine in his kit with instructions on using it. And lidocaine will last probably 10, 12 years or more stored in your kit. It's good insurance to have. We have one speaker on precious metals, gold, silver, and others that can be used as a way to make sure you have some kind of currency if we ever have hyperinflation or an economic collapse. Some folks believe that could happen. Some don't, but, you know, if you listen to them, you can get the straight scoop on the precious metals. We have Dave Lohr, who will talk about surviving in the wilderness when you have absolutely nothing. Show people how to make some snare traps, catch some protein, cute furry little dinners, and what plants in the woods are edible, which ones are poisonous and to be avoided, how to make a bow and arrow or an atlatl throwing stick to throw a small spear. You can hunt deer with those in Missouri legally. Let's see. Didn't have my list in front of me, so I'm going by my head. But on the political side, I guess we have Joyce Riley, who has a very popular talk show nationally, and Beth Ann Swearingen, who has a very popular talk show. They'll both be talking about liberty and what the government doesn't want us to know. John Moore, the Liberty Man, on the similar subjects, as well as climate change in his opinions. The Constitution Party will be there. The Oath Keepers will be there. The Oath Keepers strongly believe that those of us who were in the military or those of us who were police officers or first responders took an oath and need to hold to it to defend the Constitution. So they're good to talk to and see what they're up to. Keith Carmichael with the Convention of States Project will be there. Doreen Hannes and Ike Skelton will both be speaking on different days on Agenda 21. Let's see. The Missouri Precinct Project will be there. Judy Sofka. And they'll explain how they are trying to get better candidates to run for office, better people to be on state committees. The group that helps farmers out, the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, will be there to discuss their work on stopping government encroachment on the rights of farmers. And they have done a lot of good work in the past. You know, two speakers going on at the same time, so you have to make a choice, but some of those folks will be speaking more than once. We didn't want to have too many because I hate having to make choices when you've got two people speaking.
And
so we have a lot of people volunteering.
And there are still a few vendor tables available. How do people get a hold of you about that, Mike?
Well, they can go to the website, which is preppersandpatriots.net, or they can call me at 417-264-2435. Please wait until the show's over before you call. 417-264-2435. We have a Facebook page, Preppers and Patriots Expo. And I tell you what, we're trying to get people to like the page. We've got some pretty good numbers now, but we're going to hold a raffle. And everyone who likes the page will go into the raffle for some free admission tickets.
Cool.
And so,
okay.
And I'm really tickled to death with the way this has come together. We've had a lot of good support. People are coming from as far as Des Moines, Kentucky, Tennessee, Texas, Wichita, you know, Eureka Springs, Little Rock.
I'm looking forward to it myself. Okay, folks, that's it. We're wrapping up here. This is it. The election is Tuesday. We'll be back next week to do a post-mortem very quickly, and then we're going to get right back to business. We're going to put this behind us. We're going to get right back to business here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have Keith Carmichael come along, talk again about the Convention of the States. We'll have Mike Moon come along and talk to us, win or lose. Then we'll have Lloyd Thomas Sloan in the near future, and we'll get back to those solid, hardcore state sovereignty issues. Mike and I will be back next Friday and Saturday night, but between now and then, all is not void. All is not lost. On Tuesday night, Cynthia Davis comes along with the show Homefront. Very exciting. Cynthia is a hoot. She's entertaining and very, very educational. And then on Wednesdays, Lisa Payne Nager comes along with the Culture Vigilante, a different kind of show than Cynthia's, very fast-paced, lots of guests crammed into a two-hour period, a lot of information there. You don't want to miss that. Tuesday night, Cynthia Davis. Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager. Next Friday and Saturday night, Mike and Dave with the Sovereignty Hour. God bless you all. And good night.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, your heart is breaking, learn to be